Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
So, Doc, it hurts when I put my arm up.
Doctor says, don't put your arm up.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another edition of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Episode 63. 63. Going strong. From the Tribune Tower. Apparently, about 6 months from now or so, we won't be able to say that. I think it's going to be on a food truck that's just going to be driving up and down Michigan Avenue. Well, you know, if you think about it, they don't. It's a radio station. They don't really need a building. They just need equipment, and they could do that in a truck. I mean, they can. They really don't need.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
just have your Comrex in there. Your car.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess it sounds better to have an address if you have a business card. But anyway, so yeah, there was news the last week or so that WGN Radio is, you know, having to move out of the Tribune Tower, sadly. It was sold about 6 or 8 months ago to a developer that's going to, you know, revamp the whole building. I think it's going to be a mixed-use kind of building with some retail and some residences as well as some business. But there's going to be some major, major renovations, and so WGN Radio will be leaving the Tribune Tower. Now, as it was noted in the paper, the fact of the matter is that WGN Radio was not always at this location. So it's not like, oh my gosh, for about a good 20 years or so, WGN Radio was broadcast out of Bradley Place, where the TV station is, too. And then it came downtown. And, of course, had the great Showcase Studio, which I had the great pleasure of working in every day for like 5 years, and I always said it was the greatest office in the city, no doubt about it. Great view, really cool, a lot of energy, seeing the people walk by. And a lot of times, a lot of people, even when I do some fill-in here, some people, I think Nick DiGilio does his show from this studio that we're in now.
Yeah, he does.
Which is on the 7th floor. It's a nice studio, all new equipment. It's only 2 or 3 years old, but I don't care if I fill in at 2 a.m. or 11 a.m. or 11 p.m. or whatever. I always go to that Showcase Studio. I love that Showcase Studio. It's a cool place. So that's the sad thing. I'm sure it's not going to change the sound of the station at all. I mean, there's sometimes when you're able to bring the outside people walking in into the show, but for the most part, you know, the shows are self-contained, but certainly to be working in that space was always a kick every day. It was just really neat to just open that door and walk in there and sit in that little cockpit there and just look out the window and watch the city go by for 4 hours. Very cool. So let me go right to the phone here and pick up with our buddy Mick Kaler. How you doing there, Mixter?
Doing good, bud. How about yourself?
Well, I'm not doing too bad. Today, I just came back downtown. I went to see the Rolling Stones exhibit at Navy Pier.
Oh, okay.
And it was interesting. I'm not a huge, huge Stones fan. Are you? I mean, I remember. I think you're probably a bigger Stones fan than I am.
Yeah, I am. When you look back on their legacy and their records, and I grew up with them because my sister playing them in the room next to me when I was growing up, I heard all of them so often. I don't have the fondness for them that I do the Who,
yeah.
But it's right up there because I've always just been a big fan of their whole persona. I mean, they are the quintessential rock and roll band, you know?
You know, it's so funny because that's another thing. I came in, I went right before I recorded the podcast because it's at Navy Pier, so I figured I'd kill two birds with one stone because that exhibit, I think by the time this podcast airs, it may be done.
Okay.
End of July
is when the that exhibit closes at Navy Pier. It started in April, so I wanted to go before it closed. But I came in today and a little earlier, and I was talking to Kevin, the producer, and he's big into music. He's a musician himself. I just learned. I didn't know you played bass.
Oh, yeah, bass and guitar.
Nice. And so I just said to him today, I said, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the Stones. I'm a bigger fan of The Who.
Right.
So now so once again, twin sons of different mothers.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I got the funny thing is, as soon as I walked out of this exhibition, which took me about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half. So they certainly give you your money's worth. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on, the costumes and all this other stuff. But as soon as I walked out, the first thing I thought of was, I'd like to see a Who exhibition.
And who knows? Maybe that'll be the next one that comes up.
I hope so. Because I've always been a more of a Who fan. And we were talking about this too. You know, the Rolling Stones, there's nobody in rock and roll who are better self-promoters than the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, they were sometimes they get called, you know, overhyped. And I think some people retract from that and say, oh, my gosh, they're just always so hyped about the greatest rock and roll band in the world and all that.
Well, they're the ones who actually came up with that.
Sure.
That designation.
They gave themselves that moniker, just like Michael Jackson is the king of pop.
Exactly.
But it stuck.
Yeah. And so, I mean, what's interesting about this is that it does feel very big, and it does feel a little overhyped, which is interesting because it does, to your point, it sort of does reflect the band.
Right.
But at the same time, you do, especially now, I mean, all these bands are all over 50 years old now. And so you walk through this and you do realize how they were really part of a whole era that they were kind of inventing this stuff on the fly.
Exactly. There was no end game of, well, this is what will happen when this happens.
Yeah. Well,
we're just going to record and go out and tour and do our thing. And that's how it ends up.
Well, not only was there no end game, there was no blueprint. I mean, now any band who comes along has a 50-year history to pick and choose, to a great extent, what kind of path they want to take. Do we become the Beatles? Do we do it like the Stones did? Do we do it like this person did it? You have to really understand, even though there was Elvis, you know, Elvis kind of, you know, if you think about Elvis in the whole stream of his career, I mean, you know, he really was only that Elvis phenomenon for two or three years. Then he got drafted.
Right, the Army, and then he wasn't the same after that.
No, I mean, and he certainly was still popular in terms of the movies, and then, of course, when he did Vegas. But it was a different kind of popularity. It wasn't that kind of mania and frenzy. And then when the Beatles came along, that whole mania and frenzy started up again. And what's interesting, when you look at The Who, is that they the Stones, they initially did kind of follow the Beatle blueprint.
Right.
You know, they all dressed the same, and they had the suits, and they were sort of going that kind of Brian Epstein blueprint way of the way the Beatles were.
Kind of almost like a young boy band thing.
Yeah, but then I think someone, whether it was Mick or Keith or somebody in their organization, decided to say, you know what? We got to be the anti-Beatles. We got to be the rough boys. If they're the pretty boys, we're going to be the rough boys.
Right. Now, and it's funny you bring that up because you got the pretty boys, you got the rough boys, and The Who, I always saw The Who as the good old boys. They're rowdy and crazy, but they're not like, oh, my God, I might die if I go to their show, okay?
Well, you know, and that's the one thing that I was talking with Kevin about, too, is like I don't understand. I really can't put my finger on why, but for whatever reason, I would consider the Holy Trinity of the British invasion, the Beatles, the Stones, and The Who.
Right.
But in my view, The Who would be second.
Yeah, that's where I'd go too.
But yet, the Stones will always be at least second, and for some people, even ahead of the Beatles.
Sure.
And I don't know why, ultimately, The Who is somewhat relegated. They don't. Even though they've been around for 50 years, they've done some amazing stuff. They have a huge, you know, following, but still, there is a difference between in popularity and in just the whole perspective of when you say the Beatles and you say the Rolling Stones, and then you say The Who. there's a drop-off, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, you know, I think part of it might have been getting back to the hype and the persona of Jagger and Richards and all that, that it just kind of, it was just a big, bigger splash, okay? And I agree. I think the same thing happens. Like you said, people talk about that. But again, I think if you dig deeper, it's like, no, I got to put the who above the stones. And that's what I do.
The only thing I could think is that at the end of the day, you know, as far, you know, both the Stones and the Who were certainly, you know, rock and roll bands and deep cut bands and FM, you know, classic rock bands.
Yeah, staples.
But the Stones, amidst even that, even though they were always kind of, you know adult, you know, or album-oriented rock stars, they always had hits, whether it was Satisfaction, Paint It Black.
Start Me Up.
Obviously, Start Me Up and all
miss
that stuff.
Miss You, all that kind of business.
But I'm looking at The Who, and if you look at it, it's like, you know, Bob O'Reilly and Won't Get Fooled Again. And Tommy, those are all big, long songs. And it really wasn't. I mean, they had some hits. But really, if you think about it, it wasn't until, like, You Better You Bet that they really had a top 40 bona fide radio hit on Casey Kasem.
Well, and think of when you were growing up listening to AM radio. You know, every once in a while you'd hear Pinball Wizard by The Who on AM radio, but it was The Who was kind of, like you said, relegated to this lesser hit-friendly stuff as opposed to Jumpin' Jack Flash, Satisfaction,
right.
Paint It Black,
yeah.
Under My Thumb, all these songs that rolled out with the Stones that were like, wow, this is really part of the fabric of radio. You know?
And, you know, I mean, the other side of it, too, is that while the Stones certainly were a group, they also did have strong personalities. You know, like, obviously, you know, Jagger and Richards. And even though The Who had, you know, Pretty Boy, if you will, Roger Daltrey singing, and you had Pete Townsend smashing guitars, and you had...
Right, being the genius of the music behind him.
And you had Keith Moon in the background just going crazy and, you know, blowing things up and playing drums with this kind of ragged abandon.
Yeah,
and even John Entwistle, who really was a forerunner and an important part in sort of putting the bass guitar as almost like a lead instrument.
Right.
You know, when you listen to, you know, My Generation and things like that, I mean, he and Jack Bruce were like playing the bass, not as a support or a rhythm instrument, but as a lead guitar.
Exactly.
But so maybe The Who was always more of just a band as opposed to the Stones, which had strong personalities, and, you know, Jagger was the ultimate rock star sex symbol. So maybe that was it, too. I don't know. But when I listen to music, I mean, if you put a Stones album next to a Who album, I will take the Who album every time.
Yeah, I think I will, too. And it's funny you bring all this up because, you know, there have been all these big tours this year, you know, Paul McCartney in town and Roger Waters and the Who's going back on the road and all these groups. And I was thinking about this, and you and I have talked about this about Elton John, too. And sometimes people, especially rock critics, will sit there and say, well, geez, why are these guys still doing this? You know, why are they still out on the road? Why are they doing this? And you and I have talked about the money before. But here's the other part, and I've tried to explain this to people, and they kind of understand it better. This is what they do.
Right.
Okay? if you're the Stones or you're the Who, okay, you've been in this band. There, as I said, there's no end game, and it's not, well, we're in this band till we get real jobs,
yeah.
Or we're in this band till we graduate college. This is it. This is what they do. Okay?
Yeah, I mean, I recently interviewed Frankie Valli, you know, Valli in the Four Seasons. I wrote a story for the... he's going to be at Ravinia in September, and so I wrote a story for the Ravinia magazine. So I interviewed him over the phone, and that was one of my questions to him, and his answer is almost exactly what you just said.
Right.
He said, this is what I mean, he's 8, and don't forget, Frankie Valli is 83.
Gosh.
I mean, he's not even 71, you know.
Right.
He's 83. And he's out there still singing Dawn Go Away, you know. Now, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to go see him, and I'd be interested to see if he still has that falsetto. At 83,
right,
if he still has that, I mean, then more power to him. If he doesn't, I don't see how you can begrudge the guy. But ultimately, he said, and he did say, yeah, you know, I'm getting to a point now where I am beginning to decide whether I would start to really, you know, scale down my touring. But At the same time, he said, this is what I do.
Yeah, this is my job.
This is
I'm not a plumber in the season.
Yeah, he said, I don't smoke and I don't drink and I don't really have other hobbies.
Yeah.
This is all I've done since I've been a teenager. And right. this is what I do. And you know, certainly I think there is a point where you know, from a quality standpoint, that's where you have to begin to, you know, if you're that performer, you have to decide, am I going to do this knowing that I don't have the chops anymore?
Right. Are my skills diminishing?
But at the same time, as you just said, not only is it all that they know how to do, but, you know, there is a huge, huge nostalgic pull that baby boomer generation has with the Beatles and the Stones and the Who, and if you want, like I said, you want to bring Elton or Billy Joel or all these people from the 60s and 70s, that the Eagles, you know Fleetwood Mac, you know, here's Paul McCartney. Now he was just in Chicago here, and I was reading some reviews from people. Not, I haven't read any critical reviews, but I saw some reaction from on social media, and a lot of people said, wow, McCartney has lost his voice.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if it's just he lost his voice that night, or if that, I mean, you know, but it was to the point of, wow, this was really sad. Now, that was what I was always impressed with. I saw him about 2 or 3 years ago at Wrigley Field.
Okay.
And it was a 3-hour show outside in the summer, 90 degrees. He was sweating his butt off. But he still sounded good. But, you know, he's 75.
Well, it was funny you mentioned him because I looked at online at the set list he's doing. He's doing 31 songs.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's an incredible thing. But, I mean, but there is a point. You know, like, once again, now you look at the other side of the coin. There's Tony Bennett.
Yeah.
Who's 91. And, I mean, I've seen him on some TV shows of late. And come on. I mean, the guy's 91. He doesn't have the same voice that even, I mean, sadly, with Tony Bennett, you could say, well, it didn't sound like he did when he was 83.
Yeah. You go back a little bit, he's still old. Yeah.
But I mean, he's really done an amazing job of longevity. I don't know what he does, but now, so even if his voice is beginning to falter, you can't really blame the guy because he's 91. And once again, that show is a perennial sellout at Ravinia.
Sure.
So even if he's not up to par, there's people that just want to see him and be a part of that. So here's the point with McCartney. Let's say that maybe, you know, his voice is shot, and maybe it's because of touring, you know, and doing shows every night. You know, and he's just a little ragged, you know, or let's say the voice is gone. But, you know, there's only two Beatles left.
Right, this is what you got to see live. You want to say you saw a Beatle? You saw him. You saw some Beatle songs.
And so I think that's where you have to, you know, I mean, maybe when I was in my 20s, I would have thought much differently about this. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm older, you say, you know what? There is a shelf life on these guys, on these bands. And that shelf life of mortality is closer. 30 years ago, there was no, you didn't think about mortality for rock and roll or these performers. But as we've seen in the last several years, the rock and roll lifestyle, I think, as I've said many times, certainly has an expiration date on it. And for some people, it seems to be in the late 60s.
Yeah, late 60s, early
70s.
All of a sudden they keel over.
Yeah,
and gone.
You see a lot of guys and a lot of rock stars dying. I mean, look at David Bowie, 69 years old. But even a lot of side men, maybe not even the high profile people. All the, you know, the bass player from this band, or the, you know, the keyboard player from that band, you know, one of these classic rock bands. And you'll always see age 68, 67.
Right.
Greg Allman just died. I think he was 67 or 68. 69. I mean, it just seems like that rock and roll lifestyle does take a toll. And so when you look at people like McCartney, who is 75, and you look at, Jagger's, what, 72 or 73?
Yeah, the Stones are all up there.
Yeah, you have to say there is a time when you're going to see that one day that headline's going to come.
Yeah.
And so the question is, is it worth to see a subpar Rolling Stones, but still to see them, Or is it best that they walk off the stage because we can't do it anymore and then deprive people to say, well, you know what, I would rather see a Mick Jagger at 50% of his abilities than not to see him at all.
Right, exactly. Well, and the other part of that is sometimes that, you know, they'll correlate singers or bands to athletes. Okay, an athlete knows when he can't hit that ball, you know, a baseball player can't hit that ball anymore or can't hit it, you know, as far as it goes, or a pitcher can't throw it. They know when it's like, okay, guess what? It's over. And there were diminished skills, but it's a faster decline, and then all of a sudden you're no longer playing baseball and you're doing something else in your life. With rock stars, like you said, with musicians, it's like, well, he can't sing as high as he used to, but you know what? I still know the song, and I still like hearing it, and he still plays it, and he still looks okay. So guess what? I'm okay with that. And again, like you said, there is this decline, but I still saw.
Well, but the other side of the coin is you can certainly, I mean, to some players, to their credit, and there's not that many when you talk about you know, sports figures, some of those people, unfortunately, are the last ones to realize.
Yeah, that it's time to go.
You know, the ability has diminished, and we've seen a lot of players hang around way too long. And sadly, one of the main examples of that is Michael Jordan.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, you know, Michael Jordan could not have asked for a more picture-perfect way to end a career when he did.
Yeah, when he made that last shot against Utah to win the game and win the championship, the six Bulls title, he could have left it there and been perfect.
And then he came back. And he was very human when he came back with the Wizards. And you know, once again, there's a lot of players. I remember in the 70s, Willie Mays played.
Oh, yeah, at the very end when he went back to the Mets.
He played on the Mets, and, I mean, it was really sad. I mean, this was Willie Mays, and here was a guy that, you know, his career was defined by his athleticism and his speed. And, you know, his just proficiency as an all-round player, throwing, running, catching, hitting. And to see a guy just, you know, just barely, you know, but how do you tell Willie Mays that you're quitting?
Right, yeah, it's like you gotta stop, Willie. And again, getting back to sports, then you go with statistics. Well, he doesn't hit as many homers, or like you said, he strikes out, or he doesn't run as good. And again, you go back to musicians. Well, I still know the song, and it still sounds pretty good. But again, the diminishing part is in a more gradual phase, so these guys can hang out longer, and I'm fine with it.
Well, here's the thing. You know, that's a good point, too, that you made about before that I'd never really thought of. The thing that you can always, you know, at least, you know, say you take the Who or you take the Rolling Stones, if you're just a musician, the age doesn't necessarily show as much as the voice does.
Right.
So, you know, Pete Townsend, when he plays those opening chords of Pinball Wizard, they're practically probably very similar in the way they sound and the speed and everything that they were from 1967.
Exactly.
But when Roger Daltrey tries to hit, you know, Love Rain or Me, or do one of his major screams,
he has more of a struggle.
He has more of a struggle. And I saw him literally lose his voice on stage here in Chicago about 10 years ago and left the stage.
Right.
And came back a half hour later.
Had to recover, exactly.
And I could tell when the show started, I went with my wife, and when he started singing, he was struggling. Yeah. And I said to my wife, there's no way he finishes this show.
Right.
I said that.
And again, you know, and a side note on Daltrey, you know, Eddie Vedder's been a big fan and played with the Who and guest starred on their shows a lot of times and things. And he was in town a couple years ago where he played with them. I think it was at the Rosemont Theater. And Vedder did like a couple nights singing a few Who songs. He said those songs are so hard to sing at his age, and he's a lot younger, where his voice is shredded. He goes, how does Roger Daltrey do this year in and year out?
Well, not even that, but and it's been on PBS, and I don't know. They've done it a few times for charity. But Townsend has created kind of a symphonic and a classical music version of Quadrophenia.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Or was it of Tommy? I'm not sure which one.
It was Quadrophenia. They did one of Tommy before, but this is the one of Quadrophenia.
Yeah, with Quadrophenia. And so there is an opera singer.
Yeah.
An opera singer who is a trained voice who, you know, hits the high notes for a living. And he said the same thing. How the heck does Roger Daltrey sing these songs?
Right.
And this guy is a trained singer. Daltrey was never a trained singer. So clearly, you know, and that's why I give, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, controversy, and I understand the disappointment, and I'm sure even from the band itself, you know, everybody wants to see that one last Led Zeppelin reunion.
Yeah, with and, Plant, you know, and Page.
Yeah, and I'm sure that it drives Jimmy Page crazy, because once again, as a musician, he can still play those licks.
Yeah, he can still do Whole Lot of Love and Stairway to Heaven and Black Dog and all those songs with his fingers and his hands playing that guitar.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't have any kind of arthritis. But you know, I'm sure, and I give Plant a lot of credit for saying, "Look, gang, I could maybe do those songs one or two nights, but I can't do it for 6 months. You know, with shows, you know, four shows a week."
Right.
I mean, the guy's, you know, he's got to be close to 70, if not over 70. And those songs at that time, he was probably straining the hits. I mean, if you think about the classic Zeppelin songs, they all are high-pitched screamers.
Yeah, try to do the opening of Immigrant Song. Okay?
Yeah, I mean, so I give Plant a lot of credit for saying, look, gang, I don't want to go out there and embarrass myself or do a discredit to the music or the memory or not give people their money's worth. But what you said a little while ago, and maybe you just said it in passing, but I think it's a really good point. You know, so many of the, when you go to see a classic rock show at this point, when you see whether it's Bob Dylan or The Who or The Stones or Elton or whoever it may be, you know, for the most part, they are playing all the greatest hits, all the well-known
all the stuff
hits
that people know.
And many times, if you stop, you will notice that the whole crowd is singing those songs.
Sure.
So, to your point, maybe the lead singer, like I wasn't at this Paul McCartney show, but I guarantee you that when Paul, I mean, like you said, you saw the set list. It's 30 songs, and they're all, you know, well-known greatest hits of either Beatles or McCartney or Wings. I'm sure throughout that whole show, for the most part, the crowd was singing louder than he was.
Yeah, exactly. So they can put it back to him.
Yeah, so does he need to sound that good?
Exactly. Well, and getting back to that thing about that endurance, if you notice, and I've read this before too, the Who are not allowed to play two nights in a row because no insurance company will cover it because of Daltrey. He needs a night off between shows to rest his voice.
Well, and to your point about the thing about Eddie Vedder, in fact, that happened in Chicago. They had the last time they were here, they had like two shows and they were like 3 days apart. Just like you're saying, but in between there was a charity event.
That's the one that Vedder was at, right?
And the reason that Vedder was at it was because Daltrey was not allowed to sing on that off night.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, so there
are
limitations. And like I said, I don't know what happened. From what I understand, he may have actually that night when I saw him when he lost his voice, he may have gotten a cortisone shot.
Okay, just to get himself back up to speed.
Like in his throat.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, but my gosh, I mean, because he came back, and I was like, okay, how did he do this?
Yeah.
So something weird and magical had to have happened back there. But, I mean, when that happened, even Townsend turned around and saw Daltrey just throw, he threw the microphone down and walked off. And they finished the song. They were doing You Better You Bet. Townsend finished singing it, and then he said, "Well, I'm going to do the lead on a song that I've never sang lead on before." And they did a 20-minute version of My Generation.
Okay.
And every so often, you'd see Townsend turn around and look to see
is he coming back?
Is he coming back, or how long are we going to keep doing this solo? You know, but yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that you have to begin now. To realize, I mean, all the times I've seen Elton, And he does, you know, he does sing his heart out. But I, you know, the more I see him live, you know, he had a throat surgery.
Nodule thing or something.
Yeah, nodules back in the 80s. And it really did affect his voice to the point where he went down a register.
Oh, easily, yeah.
And his voice does sound different, but it's a different sound, but it's not bad. But what really is funny, when I listen to those classic albums now, the albums, as many times as I've seen him live, and he's a great performer, and he does the songs very well, there's no question about it, and his piano playing is perhaps better than it ever was, which is ironic. But I do find myself going, you know, his voice was so unique, and he did use the falsetto sometimes. You know, that high-pitched, and then he would go down. He within the course of one song, he would frequently use very different ranges.
Yeah.
And it really made him unique, and it made those songs. And when I listen to the album versions, I see him live, and I go, you know, I really do miss that old Elton sometimes.
It's a different flavor.
Yeah.
Well, a great example of that would be Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
And that's the one, exactly. That's the one song that, when he plays that song live,
yeah,
and then I hear it later on a record, and I go, my gosh, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is almost like, it's almost dreamlike.
Yeah.
The way those harmonies and his voice is. And he still does it well, but it's different, and it doesn't have that kind of ethereal kind of feeling, like you're almost like in a dream. But like I said, it's going to be interesting to see, because each year there's so much money that these guys can make, that how do you, like they said, that, you know, Henley said, oh, the Eagles are dead now, that Glenn Frey passed away, and then... You know, his manager, Irving Izoff, said, look, man, you know, we can do these Eagles reunions and do some, you know, two shows on the West Coast and two shows on the East Coast, like that desert trip, and charge $600 or $700 a night.
Yeah.
And so suddenly it's like, hello, Glenn Frey's son?
Can you play with us?
Can you sing Take It Easy? hello, Vince Gill? Can you do Peaceful Easy Feeling? Because there's a lot of money on the table here.
Well, and I've heard Henley on interviews admit that it's like, you know, when people are throwing that kind of money, and the one thing that surprised me about them, I always thought, especially with Don Henley, who's so kind of principled, that they've done, you know, those private performance and corporate events. If somebody's got the money, guess what? They're going to show up.
Oh, no, I mean, I don't blame them, but it's just a...
It's just hard to walk away from that.
Well, like I said, there is a question of the quality versus... You know, the spectacle, and I guess, you know, you said it at the beginning. From the outsider's view, you can say, oh, you know, it's time for you to leave the stage and leave us with the memories, you know, like Michael Jordan, you know, leave us with the shot at Utah as opposed to your Washington Wizards career. But then you got to look at the other side of that actual performer, and you know. That's what they do. That's what they love. And I always say that, you know, there are some jobs that people do retire from, right? You retire.
Sure. Whether it's an athlete or
right.
a fireman.
But, well, no, but not even, an athlete, because you just can't hit a fastball anymore. But, you know, a fireman or an accountant or a policeman sure. or whatever, a plumber, whatever it is. But I believe that if you're an entertainer, I do not believe an entertainer, I don't think it's possible for an entertainer to retire.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I think the audience retires you.
Right.
You don't retire. The only time you retire is when the audience says, we don't want you anymore.
Yeah, we're not going to buy those tickets. We're not going
right.
to go see you.
But if there is still an audience, if you're a true performer, if there are four people there, you will walk out and you will do it. You know, because that is in your blood. And so yeah. and so I think there, you know, that's you can look at it from an artistic standpoint. Look at Picasso. He was in his 80s and 90s.
That's the artist that I bring up as far as he kept painting.
He's still painting. You know, and so the same way with rock, you know, it started and everybody got involved in it as a rebellious kind of, thing to just get out there and just be what you wanted to be. And there's no question that those were the initial instincts and the initial motivations of most of the people that got into it, in addition to, wanting to get girls. But there's no doubt rock and roll has become an establishment. It's become monolithic and a big business. But at the end of the day, it is made up by a bunch of performers. And if people still want to see you, I mean, Paul McCartney, you could see he just likes being in front of people.
Yeah, and there's a guy, when you talk about money, who needs more money than Paul McCartney?
He does not need any money. I mean, he is the richest rock star on earth. And yet he still is 75 and he can't leave that stage. And to your point, he played 30 songs. That's a 3-hour show.
Right. Yeah, you think you just taper it down and say, okay, we'll do 10 Beatles songs and 15 Wings or 10 Wings songs and an encore and we're gone.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I certainly go to see my show. As I said, I joked a few years ago. Every show that I saw, like say 5 or 6 years ago, and it still rings true. Everybody was like Social Security age.
Yeah.
On the stage. I'm like, I haven't seen anybody in their 30s.
Well, the thing that makes me feel good about that is they're older than I am.
Yeah.
Okay?
I guess that's the only reason that I'm going to see them because I've always said too, and this is not a question. I'm not trying to rationalize it. The way that I've always looked at it is when I was in my 20s and 30s, and I went to my share of concerts. I mean, my God, I've probably gone to at least 500 or 600 shows aside from Elton. If I saw somebody 30 years ago, 25 years ago, who was 50 years old at a concert of mine, I'd be like, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah, you must be with some kids.
Yeah.
Right? Your kids are here.
Yeah, leave. Drop your kids off, but come back and pick them up. I don't want you here. So I would think if I'm walking in to see, some band that's in their 20s and 30s, they're not singing to me.
No.
And they're not singing for me. And I don't blame them. I don't begrudge them. And I could like their music, but at the end of the day, that really, I really feel like I'm infringing on someone else's scene.
I was just going to say, you're encroaching where people are going to go, well, man, what are you doing here? This is our deal.
Yeah, and I don't want, and I might not even be a poser, but you could be accused of being a poser, like, oh, sure.
Look at cool hipster Daniel over there.
Yeah, you're into this. Yeah, right. And I might be, but, like I said, I think, and you go to a show, and that's why, to your point, I like walking into the concerts that I go to, and even though I'm older, I'm still young there.
Yeah, I'm still like, hey, you know what? I'm a kid compared to that guy up on stage who's singing Satisfaction, okay? So,
like I said, I will never forget that my funniest concert story was about 4 or 5 years ago, seeing the Eagles when Glenn Frey was still alive, one of their last tours. In fact, it probably was their last tour. And they did an intermission. And usually when you go to a concert, the longest line at any kind of concert or any even kind of public event, the longest line for the bathroom is always the women's bathroom, right?
Oh, the women's John. Exactly. It's out the door.
Well, not at this Eagles concert.
All the Flomax.
Yeah, there was so much Flomax going on. When they cut, and even Glenn Frey made a joke, and now it was actually kind of prescient. He made a joke. He said, we're going to take a break because we got to go to the bathroom up here. And when the lights went off, or lights went up, all you saw were all these guys with their bad khakis jumping up and running to the hall. When I went to the hallway, the line for the men's bathroom was down. The woman's bathroom would walk right in.
Yeah, it's like right there you wish you were a woman because it's like a whiz.
And the best part was I'm sitting 2 rows off the aisle. And this is what got sad for me. There's this old guy with these big old jeans on and his black Eagles T-shirt, and the lights go up in intermission. This woman nudges me and she said, "Would you help my husband get out of his seat?"
Oh my God!
And he had a cane. And I'm sitting there going, "Rock and roll,
yeah,
rock and roll,
rock on, man, rock on."
Oh man. I never felt so much older. in my life because I was like, oh my God. It's like, yes, old, you know, Father Time is a cruel, cruel master.
Well, think of it this way. There's going to be a day where your wife, Jamie, is going to be going, excuse me, son, can you help my husband out of the chair?
Oh, my God. I mean, well, I'll probably have to start wearing Depends so I won't have to get up.
Yeah, to get one of those stadium buddies, right? take a whiz right there at your seat.
So anyway, Mick, I look at my list.
Of all the things we're going to cover today? You know what? We're like the Grateful Dead, Jim. We just do a jam, okay?
No set lists.
No set lists. It's like, Jim's like, we're going to play this song. No, we're not. We're just going to go out and just do it, okay?
Well, I was kind of moved by the Stones thing here, so I said, well, let's just see if I can cut this off after 5 minutes or go with it, but I thought it was fun.
Well, it's a fascinating thing because, you know, as the years have gone on, you know this too, music's such a part of, you know, not just our culture, young people, because you see young people at these shows of the Eagles or the Stones or the Who or whatever, and it's everybody's life, so it's a thing worth delving into because there's a lot of layers to it.
Well, and think about it, too. I mean, you know, I remember at the end of his career, Frank Sinatra, was forgetting words.
Right.
And people are like, oh, my gosh, why is he out there? But once again, you know what? He was out there because people wanted to be in the same room.
And they saw the chairman of the board.
Even if it was a diminished Frank.
Sure.
They wanted to see it. And so what's so funny is if you go back and look, and I've got some of my old Rolling Stone and some of my old magazines from the 70s and 80s, and, you know, you constantly read these rock stars in these interviews saying, well, I'm not going to be singing, you know, Mick Jagger, I'm not going to be singing Satisfaction when I'm 35. When I'm 35, you're right. You're not going to be 35. You're going to be 75.
And you're still going to be in your leotards and your tight shoes and your, you know, prancing and preening, and you're going to do that.
And, you know, and they also then, because, you know, it was always viewed as kind of the graveyard for a performer. I'm never going to go and play. Elton even said, I can't see myself singing Crocodile Rock when I'm 45 in Vegas. Well, I guess what? He's been in Vegas now for 10 years with a residency, and his encore song is Crocodile Rock.
And he loves it, probably. Yeah. He's like, hey, guess what? They're showing up, and I'm playing for them.
So, you know, they've all become hypocrites. They've all done exactly, they've all done and become what they actually rebelled against.
Exactly.
But that happens, you know, don't we all become our parents? And don't we, with age, don't we all find out that we usually become what we used to rebel against? And so that's, unfortunately, where rock and roll is right now, is that some of, you know, its grandmasters are actually becoming what they used to say they never would be. But you know what? It like you said, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Now, on a real quick side note, I saw this online a few days ago. The one guy, and he's getting up there in age too, who is still sounding the same, is John Fogerty.
Oh yeah,
and they showed somebody put online a clip of him singing live, like in the 70s, the 80s when he was doing a lot of the solo stuff, and now there's no difference.
Yeah, although he does.
There's a few that are like that. Do that, but as you said, the other ones that are aging or not getting up as high on the register or got to play every other night or whatever the deal is, guess what? We're still there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and John Fogerty was, in fact, at like some fest recently here in the Chicago area.
Yeah.
Like at some out, like at like Hillside Fest or something.
Yeah, so there's some that do it. And the other point, too, when you talk about Elton playing such a great piano, I have to be honest, and I've seen enough online clips. I think Joe Walsh is playing the best guitar of his life.
Oh, believe me. I saw Joe Walsh and part of that Eagles show a couple years ago, and he pretty much stole the show from the Eagles.
He's just an amazing player, plus his persona. But it's like, you know what? Maybe you can get better with age, depending on what you do.
Well, in his case, he sobered up.
Yeah, well, that was the big thing. Once he did that, he was golden, you know?
Yeah, so anyway. Well, maybe next week we will talk about what I wanted to talk about.
That set list is going to get really long now.
Always fun talking to you, Mixer. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again.
All right, pal. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right. Take it easy. Mick Kaylor. Talk a little rock and roll. And we're back here at Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here, episode 63. And we go to Emily Armonetti. How are you doing there, Emily?
Hey, Jim. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
It's good. Good, 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 good. I, once again, strayed from my my prepared notes with Mick, but I promise this week you and I are going to talk about what we've been trying to talk about for the last 3 weeks. So I promise that.
Yes.
But before we do that...
Oh, boy.
I have to ask you very quickly. So now, for the last 2 weeks, your son James has figured prominently in our discussion. Yes. How has he felt about being kind of spoken to directly and now, you know, being like a major part of the podcast?
Oh, he loves it.
Oh, does he?
I don't know what he's going to do this week. he's not on the docket.
Okay, well, we'll just say I
don't know what's going
to
happen.
We'll just always say hello to Jimmy One Sock. That will
right.
Will
that's
always
good. But
make...
we don't want to. Yeah, I think we need to keep him in check. Like, I don't want to raise narcissists. Oh. So it's probably good that we're not indulging.
Okay, yeah, we'll stay off that. But Jimmy One Sock, I know you're out there. So here's what I wanted to talk about for the last couple of weeks, and maybe it's still topical. So the Game of Thrones returns after more than a year because they delayed the season, and you know, there's only when this season started, there's 13 episodes left, and it's coming down to a conclusion, and even from the storyline, everything's kind of converging now. Even if you're not a Game of Thrones fan, you have to admit that this show is a pop culture phenomenon, and it really it is one of those milestone kind of shows that changed and is changing the way we see entertainment, especially on television, presented. And what I found interesting, and I did not know this, you do not watch Game of Thrones.
I don't.
Now, I have to admit, I was...
Let me just say, I don't know who Jon Snow is. I do not know what you are talking about.
You don't know what a Khaleesi...
wedding.
You know what a Khaleesi is?
No.
You don't know what a Khaleesi...
Is that like a disease?
Did
it
you want...
Like, I don't know, something you don't want.
So you don't want a vacation in Dorne? Or you don't want to go to Winterfell or Westeros or Dragonslate?
I feel like based on all of my impressions of the show, I probably don't want to go to any of those places. Seems like there's a lot of violence and mayhem happening.
Well, there is a lot of violence and mayhem, but here's my question. So before we talk a little bit about Game of Thrones and the importance it has had, I would like to talk. I mean, here we are in the pop culture club.
Yeah.
And you are one of the charter members of the Pop Culture Club because of your proficiency and enthusiasm and knowledge for pop culture. And yet here you are on the outskirts of pop culture. How do you reconcile that? Seriously.
I turned my back on one of the biggest pop culture phenomena of my lifetime.
Well, but seriously, do you feel a little out, like when you see all, do you view it like, oh, all the hype, or you roll your eyes, or do you feel like, geez, what, like, do you feel some kind of weird, withdrawal of the, or, you know, disconnect from the fact that you're not, you usually have your finger on the pulse of pop culture, and here, you know, you have, it's almost as if it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, I would say most of the people I know watch the show, but I don't necessarily feel that disconnected, only because, and I mean, this I know is something that is one of your pet peeves, but I find that the people that I know who watch the show, they don't even necessarily talk about it or are able to talk about it because not everybody is always at the same point because, you know, some people watch on their own schedule. So it's one of those things where I don't feel like I miss out on water cooler moments because it's hard to have those anymore, you know?
Okay, well, that's exactly what I was talking about last week, about the water cooler kind of thing. And a perfect example of what you said, in fact, when you just said that, I shot a glance over at Kevin, our producer here, because Kevin proclaims to be, and that's how we got on the we got off the subject last week, was basically his doing. Because before the show, I was asking him about Game of Thrones. He said, you know, the week before, I'm a huge fan of Game of Thrones. And I said, what did you think about the first episode? He said, I didn't see it. I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? He's like, well, you know, my wife doesn't like it. And then he said, he proposed a 10-day spoiler alert.
Yeah, you get a 10-day window.
Yeah.
10 days! So now, the second episode, he said today, I just saw the first episode. So now I can't tell about the second episode. And you're right. That show is one that people seem to, you know, either the diehards obviously watch it when it appears, but then sometimes they don't and they binge. It's an odd show in that it's so layered. It's so complex. As I said last week, I've watched it every season, and there are some major leading characters who are on every week, and I still don't know their names.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because...
But I don't understand. How does that work?
Well, because it's so... There's so many... There's like 40 storylines, and everybody's connected or related in some way, and... You know, there's so much going on, and you're drawn to the characters, and a lot of times their names aren't even, they're said one time, and then they're not said again for four episodes, and you don't even remember. And if you don't, you know, then everybody's got this British accent, so half the time you can't even hear what they're saying anyway. And
okay. See, you're already making me feel like I've made the right decision not watching this show.
No.
I hate it. Like, when you're watching a movie and there's so much going on that you're like, wait. And then you're like, wait, is that the guy? No, wait, is that the guy? No, that's, no, it's the
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I feel like that would end up happening to me with Game of Thrones.
No.
I don't want so much to be going on.
Game of Thrones, if you don't have your remote control if you don't have digital cable or digital satellite to rewind during an episode, you can't watch it because you have to put it on pause and go, now, who's this guy? And what?
Sounds like a great show.
No, but it is. Well, here's the thing. I was late to the game, too. I am not a big fan of fantasy and big, you know, CGI kind of, you know, and I'm not a big fan of battles. I don't like war movies.
Right.
I mean, I fast forward through all battles. I don't like battles.
Right.
I just don't like them.
Now I'm starting to wonder why you watch
In fact,
battles.
Last season, one of the titles of an episode was The Battle of the Bastards. That episode, when I watched it, was 7 minutes long. Because I fast forwarded through the whole battle.
Through all the battles?
Yeah, I do not like battles. I barely like Battleship.
But see, this is the thing. If we're basing our decision making on like eliminating things that we don't like, once again, I can explain this very simply. Like, first of all, I do not like anything involving dragons. Okay,
But the Khaleesi is the mother of dragons.
That does not sell me on it anyway. So the thing is, if I don't like dragons, if I'm not into fantasy, if I'm not into medieval times, if I was never into Dungeons and Dragons, like, what's in it for me? Why would I watch the show?
Well, I'll tell you.
I mean, maybe there would be reasons, but you tell me, because you watch.
Well, I will tell you, because here's the thing. I was not into it at all. I heard about it, and I said, that's not my cup of tea. I'm not a big fan of The Hobbit, not a big fan of Lord of the Rings.
Right.
And I saw the first one, and I barely made it through that, and I too many battles, and I did not see the last two. I know, like, the last one even won Best Picture, but, you know, I just, that's not my thing. So when Game of Thrones starts, I'm, like, not into this. But I'm reading all about it then, you know, Game of Thrones, but I'm still like you. I'm like, not my cup of tea. Sorry, I'm not going to like it. You know, I mean, here, perfect example. I don't like coffee, right? I don't drink coffee. Never have, never will. Now, there's a whole culture of coffee, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't partake in it. I hate coffee. Doesn't matter. Not going to drink it. So that's, you know, I don't have a favorite barista. I don't know what vente, mente, kente, flente, and gente mean. If I would go, I have no, I don't know what a frappuccino, a micuccino. I don't have any. I have no chinos. I barely say chino in my life. You know, but I've been able to survive. So there's the thing. You can survive without Game of Thrones. But here's the thing. I'm reading about it, and I'm like, boy, am I missing out on something? And then I hear and I read that in the last episode of the first season, they killed one of the main characters. Like, and not just a main character, but like a beloved main character. He was the standout character of the first season. He was the guy everybody liked. And they killed him. And I was like, wow. Now, if that's what that show is about, if that show is willing to kill off a main character for the sake of the story as opposed to the sake of its popularity, then I like that. I like what's going on there. Maybe I need to see this. And so before the second season started, there was a, you know, HBO showed a whole day. And me and my wife watched 10 hours, the whole thing. And when we got done, as much as I'm not into that whole fantasy type of thing, I was engaged by the characters and by the drama. There's a lot of intrigue. It's very well written. It looks great, even though that is not something that I, you know, once again, I'm not really big into all the effects. But I was really taken by the characters and their motivations. And so that is what has kept me through the battles, through these family trees that are more gnarled than some arthritic person. I mean, everybody has had incest or, you know, there's everything you name it. And these books, apparently, that it's based on are like, you know, 1,000 pages long. But I have to say, I think that you would, if you gave it a chance, I think you would like it. Now, granted, as I said, there are a lot of parts of it that I don't care for, but there's enough of good storytelling and good characters and good dialogue that gets me through some of the other stuff. And that's all I can tell you. If you're a fan of
it. Well,
and here's the one thing about the show, ultimately, why this show is important, is that it really brought a whole new kind of aspiration as to what is possible on television. There were high production values, great acting, good storytelling, good writing, and just a big scope of storytelling, which was usually always reserved for movies. And they brought that to television and made it compelling. And that's why it's become, I think, such a, you know, a landmark kind of show.
Right.
So top that,
I mean,
Emily.
It's going to be, look, it's unlikely I'll ever try to
really
do it, because now, well, so now it's at the point where, like, it's one of those shows that my husband will watch, like, if he has to travel or if I'm away, because we don't watch it together. And so, like, he started watching it from the beginning, and I was like, I don't think I'm ever going to watch that show. So he's like, okay, fine, I'll just watch this when you're not around. And so now he will finish it, you know, and then I don't really see myself then going back and wanting to catch up on it, because then I have even less desire to want to watch it alone.
Well,
but now I wonder, so you're saying this is supposed to be the final, like the series, like the final season of the whole series?
No, there's two more. There's this season and next season.
Oh, two more.
Yeah, there's this season and next season. But this season will be less, there will be less episodes. They usually had a 10-episode season. This season will be 7, and next season will only be 6.
Mm-hmm.
And so then,
I know you were talking recently about how their source material is kind of now.
Yeah, they're past the source material. Yeah, in fact, R.R. George Martin. Is it George R.R. Martin? How is it? It's George R.R. Martin. I think he had to do that because of George Martin, the producer from the Beatles. But he, in fact, just this week said that he thinks in 2018 he will finally put out this long-awaited sequel. But they at this point, the TV show is past the original source material. He has given them some hints as to where things might be going and where he's got them going. But up to this point, now it's anybody's guess, because nobody has read the books that we know what's going to happen next. And I have never read the books. But
there are some people out there. I know some people who watch the show who have read the books and read them before the show, which I also find interesting because I don't know. I mean, once again, I'm not into that whole genre, so I couldn't even imagine. I mean, I don't even want to watch the TV show, and it's like a huge phenomenon.
So you don't feel, you don't feel though out of the loop though, huh?
Not really, but the thing is, like, at this point, I feel like I am, like, already knee-deep in great TV, you know? Like, there's just so much out there to watch now. I mean, TV is having, like, this kind of golden age, and at a certain point, I have to draw the line, you know? I'm like, I can't spend my whole life watching TV, and every once in a while, it's nice to pick up a book, you know? Right. So, like, I don't feel, and again, like, I don't really encounter that many situations. Like, I have a few friends who watch it, and it might be mentioned, like, that it's, that, you know, like, oh, a new season is starting, but they don't actually get into the plot stuff. So I don't feel like, oh, great, now they're going to talk about Game of Thrones for 20
minutes. So if I said to you, shame, 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 you'd have no idea what I'm talking about.
No idea.
See, you're out of the pop culture zeitgeist.
Not, but am I though?
You know what I say to that? The fact that you don't know that? Shame. Shame.
Well, I doubt someone's going to walk up to me on the street and say that.
Oh,
and I'm going to be like, oh no.
How prophetic that you would have said that someone would come up to you on the street and say that.
Oh, is that what happened?
You don't even know what you're saying, and yet. That's why you should watch the show.
I just hope nobody throws
anything
at her.
And I hope she's got clothes on.
Okay, I don't know if you've been... I don't know... What? Wait, what?
See? Can't have a conversation with you.
So now I'm starting to understand why you really watch this show, which is just like naked chicks.
No, it's not. In fact, you know what the great... Here's another great irony of the Game of Thrones. There's no doubt. The first couple of seasons, there was gratuitous nudity and sex to the point of actually a joke. There was no reason for it. Every town had a brothel, and there was just naked people all over.
Like medieval times or something. Yeah. It would be something like that.
Yeah, that's true.
But, hey, I mean, maybe
but here's the irony. Right now, and I'm not going to try to give a spoiler, but the irony is, as much as there's been gratuitous sex and a lot of naked women, the way this story is plotting out, all the powerful people on this show are women. Every person of power is a woman.
Good. See, now you're actually starting to give me reasons to watch the show.
I'm telling
you. Now I could get on board with that.
I would say the top four characters are the ones who are the most intriguing, and they are all women. And they are not just intriguing from a standpoint of watching the show, but within the context of the show, they are all in positions of power, like the queens and kings. I mean, they are not just...
I like that.
Yeah, so that's what's ironic, is at one point, there's all this object... They're objectifying women, and at the next scene, they are... completely elevating women in terms of their station in society and their empowerment. It's really an interesting dichotomy. It really is.
Interesting. Now, did you see, maybe you haven't been online, but did you see the photos that I sent you today?
No, I didn't. I've been out.
So I was in the grocery store and I just had to pick up a couple of things. And I'm walking by this wine display, and like very prominently displayed, they have a Game of Thrones wine.
Of course. Of course.
And,
it's all
know,
they
And I picked it up.
That's all they do is drink wine in that show.
Right. And I guess they assume, like, I was going to say maybe you should get some, because I know that, like, for example, when you watch Twin Peaks, you like to have your
my cherry pie.
A slice of cherry pie, right. Maybe you need to have some Game of Thrones wine in your chalice when you're watching.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like I said, I'm not, like, I never went to medieval times, and I've never been to the Renaissance Fair. You know, the worst thing I've ever done is I've gone to the Luxor in Vegas, you know. But
do you own a chalice?
I don't even have a chalice. I don't even have a chalice or a sword. I don't even have a battle axe. I don't even have a battle axe. But although in my yard, I do have a knight. We do have a knight sitting in our yard. So that's
what?
Yeah, we have, well, because we have like a big rock, and so I have a sword in the rock, like Excalibur.
You are such a weirdo.
Hey, you named your son after me. What can I say?
I know, right? This is the path he's on.
So before I let you go, did you watch Breaking Bad?
Okay, we've definitely been over this, so no spoiler alerts. I am currently watching Breaking Bad.
Okay, because
I'm only like on season two.
Now, I was late to the show on that one too, because when I first heard the description, I don't like battles, and I don't like drug stories. I don't care about drug stories or battles. And so when I saw
Scarface, that was kind of a drug story.
Yeah, right? I know. And I'm not that crazy about Scarface, to be honest with you. But then I'm reading all about how great this Breaking Bad is and how it's not, you know, when I first read the first description, it's about some guy that cooks meth. And I'm like, okay, not my cup of tea. But then as the show is progressing, you're hearing how great this thing is written and how this character. And then I had to once again, after I think season three, I binge watched, and my God, I was hooked like a drug addict.
You're hooked, yeah. It's easy to get hooked on, and I do like it, and I can't explain why I'm only on season two, but I don't even know why. I don't know how it came to be that I didn't get on board. I don't know what year it started. Maybe I wasn't back here yet. I don't know, but I never started it. And then here's the thing. You never know, I guess, with me, because I never planned to watch Breaking Bad, because this was another situation where my husband started watching it, like, on Netflix, on his iPad when he would travel and stuff. And so, like, he was so far, and then he ultimately finished it, and I was like, oh, well, no reason to ever watch that. And then I did actually end up starting to watch it.
Now, so were you a fan?
I can never say never.
Okay, were you a fan of The Sopranos?
Yes, but it took me like 10 years to finally watch
okay.
the end of
because
the
Because if I have to close out on one thing to say why should you watch this, I would say Game of Thrones is The Sopranos in Middle Earth. That's what...
Okay, but I have a huge problem with that, and that problem is Middle Earth. I prefer New Jersey to Middle Earth. That's, I guess, what I...
Well, I will close this. I will close this segment with saying once again, then, three simple words to you, Emily, for not watching Game of Thrones and being on the outskirts of perhaps the biggest pop culture phenomenon in the last 10 years. So let me just leave you with these three words, and I will urge you to go to YouTube and look for this scene, and you will understand when I say to you, Emily Arminetti, shame, shame, shame. We will talk to you next week. You're not supposed to laugh. You ruined my... It was such a...
Oh, I'm sorry. It's so serious. I'm feeling a lot of shame.
That was such a poignant moment.
It was. Sorry.
Okay. Now,
okay. On that somber note, I will talk to you next week, Jim.
Okay. And say hi to Jimmy One Sox for me.
Of course.
All right. Take care. We'll talk to you.
All right. Okay,
shame. 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 But it was no shame for you to be listening to episode 63 of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday a new episode is posted, so I appreciate you clicking on. And don't forget to go to my landing page. You can listen to the 62 previous episodes if you'd like to, because Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic is the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.